Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 431, Science Faction, your weekly coronavirus update. As always, if you want to hear the rest of this week's science stories, go ahead and tune in on Tuesday and Thursday for the non-corona-related science stuff, but let's get right into our Science Faction Corona update. Today is Sunday, May 3rd, 2020. Our current numbers stand at worldwide infected 5.5 million, with 247,000 dead. U.S. numbers are about 1.17 million infected with 68,000 dead. Now, a quick caveat, obviously, I think we all know by now, those are not the actual numbers of either the infected or the dead. Dead's probably a little closer. The infected is definitely much, much bigger because we are not testing the vast majority of people, and we're finding a lot of asymptomatic cases when we are doing random testing. So those are the official numbers, but as we all know, not the real one. First off, as we are seeing, this disease is, despite what you might hear on specific news networks, much, much worse than the flu. Not only in overall deaths, we're at 68,000 in the US already. It's only been a few months. We have no vaccine. There seems to be brain damage going on with the olfactory issues. We know for a fact there's organ damage, possibly long-term permanent organ damage. There's asymptomatic transfer. All that stuff is going on. So as we can say, this is in every single way worse than the flu. Another caveat to think of, a lot of people, as those numbers are coming in, are trying to think of excuses, and they're saying, well, they're calling everything a COVID death. Even if the person dies of a heart attack, they test positive for COVID, they call it a COVID death. Well, that can be true. But what those people are forgetting is COVID causes heart attacks. So we do know that this disease infects the myocardial tissue and causes heart attacks. So if you do have a heart attack and you have COVID, it's probably because of it. And somebody could say, well, what if they had bad heart health before? We discussed this issue earlier on a previous episode, but this is a bizarre argument that nobody is making in any other case. Like, nobody finds somebody dead after a traffic accident and, you know, they're clearly, their head is crushed in and go, yeah, but he had some pre-existing medical conditions, so I don't know if the car crash really killed him. It's like, all right, even if he would have survived without those pre-existing medical conditions, but he died because of the car crash still killed him. It's the same thing. This is a bizarre argument we wouldn't accept from anything else, but for some reason it's being made here because, quite frankly, the raw data and numbers are coming in and you can't dispute them, except if you try and dispute them. In reality, we know that, in fact, those numbers are actually higher than being reported, the deaths from COVID. That's because of a few things. One, even now, to this day, all bodies are not being tested for the disease, so we're having people dying with no signs of coughing or anything else. And when they die, be that through things that look like old age or Alzheimer's or something else, if we don't have the test, we're not testing them. We now know there's a bunch of asymptomatic people who are dying from myocardial infections, from heart issues, from lung issues, from immune responses, from all this stuff that you wouldn't see from the outside. So actually, there's a whole bunch of people dying from COVID who are not being reported. And will there be somebody who, I don't know, he had cancer and died because of the COVID, but would have died anyway? Again, it's a weird question, but whatever those numbers are much smaller than the unreported ones. So regardless, we are seeing a significant amount of deaths. Those deaths are real and almost certainly underreported. Now, on to the interesting science articles about COVID for the week. Right now, a team at the University of Pennsylvania School of Veterinary Medicine are attempting to actually train dogs to sniff out COVID patients, specifically asymptomatic ones. This is an awesome idea. As we all know, dogs can sniff out bombs and people and drugs and even cancer. We've taught them to literally sniff out the organic molecules that your body produces when you have certain types of cancer, specifically skin cancer and a few others. And dogs can actually sense that and alert and let us know. And so the idea is, well, let's do the same thing with COVID. Now, we don't know if that will work. We don't know if people who have COVID are putting out specific volatile compounds that dogs can smell and distinguish and all that stuff. But if it is, and if they can, that would be really interesting. Because again, the big deal with this is the asymptomatic transfer. So if you could have a dog walking around in public and alerting on people who are asymptomatic, well, that solved a lot of problems. Heck, if you had that dog as the bouncer on the way into the bar, you could theoretically start reopening restaurants and bars right now. So something to think about is these weird kind of things that seem almost kitschy, like the idea of dog smelling, could actually be a very useful tool in fighting this disease. Moving to one of our other four-legged friends, the llama, which, by the way, I will say Yama. I know everybody else says Llama. I'm being incredibly pretentious. I did my field school and undergrad in Peru. And so for the rest of my life, like Madonna keeping her British accent, I will always say Yama. But anyway, so we had this Yama in 2016 that we purposely infected with the original SARS, the one that came out in 02. Had it developed some antibodies. It was a small experiment, wasn't thought very important. But after the entire world flipped upside down, these researchers went back, I believe it was at Texas A&M, and they went, whoa, fuck, what about that Yama? What if we saw if some of the antibodies worked on this new SARS version? I mean, the old SARS version was kind of similar. And they tested it, and that main spike protein that we talked about, that ACE2, that spike protein that's how this disease is infecting us, we found that the antibodies for the original SARS that were in that Yama did bind, though weakly, to that spike protein. What researchers were able to do is kind of tweak that antibody a little bit, the one the Yama produced for the original SARS, and basically double it, create two of them joined together. And when you did that, it pretty much neutralized the spike protein of the new SARS-2. So what that means is we can tweak some antibodies from this Yama in some farm in Texas and make something that is very effective at fighting this current form of SARS. It might mean that these antibody type treatments could be one potential route that we use to try and fight this virus. Very, very interesting. Again, just like the dogs thing, it seems like one of those clickbait headlines. There's some real science behind it, and there might be something that's very useful in these type of sensationalist stories. But away from the animals and into the chemicals, let's talk about what drugs are working and which are not. We had a bunch of news about this come out this week. What we found is not working is, as we talked about last week, that malaria medicine, hydroxychloroquine, it can have some positive effects in terms of fighting the virus, but not that strongly. And it also has very negative effects on our heart, which, as we just discussed, can be attacked by the virus too, so it might be a problem. Meanwhile, we found a new medication called PB28 that is actually better at doing what hydroxychloroquine does to the virus. It's actually better at doing it than hydroxychloroquine is. And it doesn't fuck with your heart. This might be a very interesting treatment path as well. PB28, look out for that coming out, because this might be the Trump disease without the heart deaths. Another drug that is not only not working, but shown to be very bad, is called dextromethorphan, which is actually in a lot of cold medications, which is why it's really important to be aware of this. What we're seeing is it seems to activate a cellular process that's exploited by the virus in our own bodies, meaning this drug actually helps the virus take over. So that's really important to know, because people out there might think they have just a mild cold when they first get a cough. Remember, some people do not show really severe symptoms with this disease. And if you think you just have a cold or a cough or something, and you take some standard over-the-counter cold medicine that has this drug in it, it might very well make this a very bad infection for you. So please, 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 if you take one thing out of this particular podcast, it is to be very careful of cold medicines at this point in time, because if you might have this infection and you end up taking this cold medicine, you might make it much, much worse. But it's not all bad news. We found some drugs that are actually showing to work. Some interesting drugs you probably would not have expected in lab experiments, including antipsychotics, probably wouldn't have called that, but haloperidol and cloperazine both seem to show some promise, as well as an anxiety and depression drug, ceramycin. Some antihistamines actually did show some effectiveness, and an anti-cancer drug called zotadifin seemed to show some promise. All very, very interesting. All of these drugs showed little promises. Now, these are probably not going to be the knockout silver bullet. What we're probably going to find is each one of these drugs is working in a different way, and we will find another drug to do what each one of these are doing, but better. So this will be a development process, but this is kind of like looking around and noticing what can have some promise. Another one is just the hormone progesterone. It seemed to interfere with the virus's replication in the body, which might explain why we do have a difference in male to female both infection rates and severity rates, because females have progesterone in their system. So it might be that that progesterone is actually helping them fight that virus. So maybe we'll all just start taking progesterone shots and have a little bit higher voices, less muscle tissue, but be a lot healthier. However, right now, our current best weapon, as far as the actual scientific studies show, is an antiviral we've already discussed, remdesivir. Very, very neat. It's showing promise in decreasing hospital stays for the very sick by about 30%, knocks the fatality rate from about 11% down to 8%. These are small numbers, but they're significant. And again, remember, these are the worst cases. They are not yet giving these drugs to healthy people or asymptomatic or kind of sick. These are the worst of the worst. And these people are showing some slight improvement. That might mean that it's even more effective when done earlier. In fact, some of the early studies show that it'd be much more effective within the first 10 days. There's even some talk that the drug might actually help prevent infection in the first place if taken at the right time. So this is all very preliminary, but promising, especially because a study that came out of China actually showed they didn't have any luck with the drug. That has been disputed by now, I think, three studies in the United States. That could be because of methodology. It could be the type of the virus going around. It could be some other factors. We're not sure yet. But right now, this seems to be the most promising thing we're seeing in a lot of the Western studies. And even more promising is, like I said before, this is just what's working now. We might note what works and make it even better. So this drug has the potential to get even stronger. And in the constant search for a vaccine, you might be wondering when it's coming down the pipeline. Again, we still don't know. A year would still be probably the absolute earliest. But we have like 15 to 16 really promising vaccines in parallel development right now, which means there's a bunch of different labs, like 13 or 14 labs, that's just in the US, with the NIH to create a bunch of different candidates that we can then choose from. Now, these are all going through their individual fast-track trials, and a lot of them are showing a lot of promise. What will be interesting is eventually we're going to have to test them against one another, meaning, you know, the vaccine from lab A will have to be tested against B, against C, against D, against control to see which one is most effective. The hard part isn't necessarily even developing the vaccine. The hard part is going to be that, because there's so much liability. Those companies have so much invested that they don't want to lose that race. And it might be hard to actually get those studies done with those companies' permission. So it might be something where we have a rollout of many different types of vaccines in different places, some of which with different effectiveness. We're still not sure yet. The vaccine part of this story is the Wild West right now. There could be people coming in from small labs we've never even heard of that come up with the right vaccine. That's the way these things can work, especially with something like a vaccine. And since everybody has to choose a path and go down that path, it may very well be that even the huge big boys, the Bayers, the big pharmaceutical companies, choose the wrong path and they just can't go back and restart again. So it might be a little player that comes out of this and ends up saving everybody. Who knows? But again, obviously the vaccine is the holy grail right now, because we need to get people in a state where they can go outside without being scared. Another article came out this week that talked about the immune system's response to COVID, which seems to be somewhat unique, both in terms of coronaviruses and other viral infections. Mainly what we're seeing is that the infection by SARS-CoV-2 doesn't produce a lot of antiviral interferons, which we need. Those are kind of, those cells help us fight respiratory viruses like this. And we are not seeing a good interferon response from our own cells. In fact, what we're seeing is a response of more broad cells like IL-6 that activate kind of general immune responses, meaning we're not getting targeted immune responses to this viral infection. We're getting really broad ones. That can be dangerous because an overactive immune response can actually kill you. That's what killed most of the people with the 1918 flu pandemic. It can kill us with this. But also because without a targeted response, you're going to be much less effective. It could be a trick that the virus is playing on our cells. It could be just the way our cells respond to this particular virus, whatever it is. If we can stimulate that interferon response, we might be able to fight this disease much better. Just another one of the avenues that we might go down in fighting this disease. And I do want to try and finish on a high note. Something that was terrifying the past few weeks that we've been talking about is the fact that it seems like people might be able to be reinfected with the disease after they've already had it. That coming out of South Korea, where now almost 300 people have shown that they had the disease, they tested negative for it, and then they tested positive again, indicating that they were reinfected or it got restarted or something. Now, we talked on this show how that could be terrifying. It could mean that we have no immunity whatsoever and people are just going to continue getting sick and this could be the end of the world. It could be very, very bad. But it could also just be the byproduct of a bad test. In other words, a false negative. So you got tested for the disease, you tested positive, you got tested again, you tested negative, but you were actually positive. The disease gave you a false negative. So when you got tested the third time and it showed up positive, it wasn't that you got the disease again, you had it the whole time. So right now, it is looking more and more like that is the case. Like it is an issue of false negatives with those tests. Looking back at both the tests from those 290 some odd South Koreans and the situations in which they got infected originally and have then lived, it seems to be most likely a case of that test, which remember gives a false negative reading in like 30% of cases. So that would actually kind of make sense. this is really heartening news, because again, if we can gain immunity to it, at least once you get it, you can then go out and be part of the world again without not only worrying about getting it yourself, but spreading it to other people. The idea that you could be continually be reinfected was a very scary one. And it still may be the case. It just seems to be that the tide of scientific evidence seems to be shifting towards the idea that indeed those were just false negative tests. So let's just keep our fingers crossed and hope that's the way it goes. Guys, I know these are trying weeks. I think we're about to see some progress in the next few weeks in terms of especially the drug avenue. Some of the reports we had today were just minor reports from much larger studies, but I'm starting to see these come in one after another now that we've had enough time where people could be on drugs for 5 or 10 weeks since having been infected, and we can write these studies up. We're starting to see some promising drug results, and let me tell you, this is a really exciting time, because as each one of those promising drugs gets identified, we can then identify the cause of action, the mechanism of action, and say it does this, and then go, oh, this other drug does that thing, but even better. We can explore this and find out, and I think right now the really exciting part of this is seeing all the drug stuff coming out, and it's nice to have a wave of good news as opposed to all the waves of bad news that I've been reporting on over and over again with these weekly corona updates. So I hope this heartens you a little bit. It's a really hard time, but we are doing well, and quite frankly, the scientific community is stepping up. Whether that's the medical establishment that's taking care of everybody or the research establishment that's literally solving the problem in real time. We are seeing the benefits of this. We are seeing the benefits of having this system in place. And hopefully we can all let these smart people save our asses. All right. Thank you so much for listening to this. And if you want to hear more science news about non-corona related cases, check out our Tuesday and Thursday shows. And if you want to hear the weekly scientific updates on coronavirus, tune in here every Sunday. Thank you so much. And come on back this Tuesday for Science Faction. 432.
You've been listening to Science Function. Wait, that's not right.